As children growing up in the church at opposite ends of the world, my wife and I had a common opinion with regards to the millennium. It was a somewhat controversial view at the time, with the focus on our generation being very heavily geared towards the millennium, a time when we were all supposed to be looking forward to having pet lions. The problem was, neither of us wanted a pet lion. For one simple reason, they smell. As we grew older, we then learned that the metabolism of the lion would have to be changed. And as it would no longer be a carnivore, it was most likely that it wouldn't smell quite as bad. But even still, lions were never going to make it onto the must-have list as far as we were concerned. Today I would like to examine the sense of smell, not just as a physical sense, but also as a spiritual one. As we will go on to see, smell has always been very important to God. No wonder that Satan has done his level best to corrupt it. Smell is largely considered to be a second-rate sense, and usually something negative. As Mr. Armstrong brought out many times, when the tobacco firms were heavily advertising cigarettes, they opted to use the sense of taste, the great taste of whatever, not the smell. When Adam was created, God formed him from the dust of the ground, and he didn't gain any form of life until God breathed into his nostrils. And then he became a breathing creature. He was created in the likeness of God, or as Mr. Armstrong often put it, man was created after the God kind. So like Adam, God beings have a nose. But unlike the physical God beings in the making, who are very much dependent on the next breath, the God family, however, don't need to breathe for life. So the nose must be for another purpose, at least in the spiritual realm. Smell has many uses. It can be used for identification. You can tell the ripeness of most fruit by smell, or even the age of a piece of meat. I've heard many mothers say that there is a newborn baby smell which is unique to their baby, especially in the first few months. As a man, it's a very unique smell. On the farm, a few weeks after lambing, you see little groups of the young lambs running around all over the field, and undoubtedly, at least one of them will lose their mother. They will bleat and try and locate mum by sound. If they see a sheep that even vaguely looks like mum, they will run up to it and try and suckle. The ewe will turn round, smell the lamb, to make sure it's hers. If it is, then it can feed. Otherwise, it tends to get a very swift kick, making it very clear that it needs to look elsewhere. On the odd occasion that a lamb dies, you can sometimes get the ewe to adopt another lamb. But to do this, you need to change the lamb's smell. This can usually be achieved by stopping the ewe from being able to turn round and smell the lamb while it is feeding from her for a while. Over a period of time, the lamb's smell will start to change, until eventually it would match that of the mother, and she will now feed it as if it were her own. One of the funniest examples in this regard would be a dog after it has had a bath. They run around trying to find something that smells like them, usually their bed. And then they roll around in it and try to get their smell back. The really funny bit happens when you have to wash their bed as well. With our dog, it was a look of pure panic as she would run around the house trying to find anything that smelt of her, bringing great hilarity to the household. A smell can also trigger memories. A particular scent of a flower, perfume, or even a specific brand of soap can immediately remind you of a person or a place. Sometimes these memories are even of a time before we had words as a young child. I remember Mr. Bowles mentioning several times how the smell of gripe water brought back a strange memory from when he would have been very, very young. Smell can also work with and trigger other senses. A large part of our sense of taste is actually derived from smell. This is why food sometimes won't taste right if you have a head cold or some other form of congestion. As mentioned before, shortly after man was created, he was put in a garden. This must have been a bit of a sensory overload for both Adam and Eve, with all the different trees, plants and flowers, not to mention all the wildlife, all with their own unique smell. Almost all of creation has a smell, but some might be very subtle, whilst others are quite pungent, but most organic things will have some kind of smell. Smell was very important part of the sacrifices and general operation of the temple. The burnt offerings were done to provide a sweet savour to God. When we think of savour, from what we get the word savoury, we think of food to eat. But throughout the Bible, the term sweet savour means a restful, pleasant, or delightful smell. Turn please to Numbers 28, and we'll read a small passage where this is continually referred to, in this case in regard to the establishment of the daily sacrifices. In Numbers 28, and starting in verse 1. And the Eternal spoke unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel, and say unto them, My offering and my bread for my sacrifices made by fire for a sweet savour unto me shall you observe to offer unto me in their due season. And they shall say unto them, This is the offering made by fire, which you shall offer unto the Eternal, two lambs of the first year without spot, day by day, for a continual burnt offering. The one lamb shall thou offer in the morning, and the other lamb shall thou offer at even. And a tenth part of an ephah of flour for a meat offering, mingled with the fourth part of a hin of beaten oil. It is a continual burnt offering, which was ordained in Mount Sinai for a sweet savour, a sacrifice made by fire unto the Eternal. And the drink offering thereof shall be the fourth part of a hin for the one lamb in the holy place, that shalt thou cause the strong wine to be poured into the unto the Eternal for a drink offering. And the other lamb shall thou offer at even as the meat offering of the morning, and as the drink offering thereof. Thou shalt offer it a sacrifice made by fire of a sweet savour unto the Eternal. On top of this, you had incense that was to be burnt continually, as detailed in the first few verses of Exodus 30. That passage details a dedicated altar solely for the purpose of burning incense. Another story we all know very well was the covenant that God made with Noah after the flood. But something I hadn't noticed before was why God made the covenant, or what triggered it. Just put in your notes Genesis 8, verses 20 to 22. I'll just quickly read it. And Noah built an altar unto the Eternal, and took of every clean beast and of every clean fowl, and offered burnt offerings on the altar. And the Eternal smelt a sweet savour. And the Eternal said in his heart, I will not again curse the ground any more for man's sake. For the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. Neither will I again smite any more everything living as I have done, while the earth remaineth seed time and harvest, and cold and heat and summer and winter and day and night shall not cease. It was the Eternal smelling that sweet savour of the offering that Noah had made. That's quite some covenant to make. If smell matters to God so much, why don't we still burn incense in church as a sweet savour to God? The answer to this can be found in Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians 5, and starting in verse 1. Be ye therefore followers of God as dear children, and walk in love as Christ also hath loved us, and hath given himself for us, an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling savour. We don't need to offer burnt offerings or incense to God as a sweet savour, because Christ's sacrifice was so great that it provides the perpetual sweet savour from that point on. Sadly, as with most things that God created, Satan has set about to undermine smell and our sense of it. The creation no longer smells like it used to. Modern day fruit and veg largely don't taste or smell like it used to, even in my lifetime. In my youth, I used to make a side dish of grated carrot and chopped pineapple, which we used to serve with barbecues and social events. The smell that came off the particular carrots was quite something when compared to the carrots you now buy in the supermarket. Where possible, we try to get locally produced organic veg, And these do definitely taste and smell better, but still nothing like they used to. Another pet annoyance of mine is scentless flowers, particularly roses. It is very rare now that a rose has any form of smell to it. And when they do, it is nothing like it used to be. As if attacking the way things smell wasn't enough, this modern age under Satan's influence has also seen to it that our sense of smell has also been diminished. We have pollution everywhere. More so in the cities, but even out on the farm, where the air is a lot clearer, we still have to use cars, tractors, and other heavy machinery, all of which produce pollution, which over time has been proven to desensitize our sense of smell. We also have an increase in respiratory illnesses and autoimmune conditions like hay fever and asthma, which restrict people's ability to breathe and also significantly impact their ability to smell. During the millennium, however, things are going to be completely different to how they are now, both for the physical people that enter it and for us as newly born spirit beings. We know from Isaiah that the land will be a land of unwalled villages, and although there will be some cities, they won't be anything like the sprawling metropolises that we now see around the world today. Between the parcels of land will be woodland, a habitat for wildlife, and with a variety of trees, plants, and flowers, it will smell wonderful as it is walked through. The ground will be fertile, and the fruit of that ground will be what it should have been, as God originally created it. But what about us, who will be spirit beings by this stage? We know God can smell physical smells, as we read earlier about the sacrifices and burnt offerings being a sweet savour. But spirit beings can apparently smell other things too. Turn, if you would, to Revelation 8. Revelation 8, and we'll start reading with verse 1. And when he had opened the seventh vial, there was silence in heaven about the space of half an hour. And I saw the seven angels which stood before God, and to them were given seven trumpets. And another angel came and stood at the altar, having a golden censer, and there was given unto him much incense, that he should offer it with the prayers of all saints upon the golden altar which was before the throne. And the smoke of incense, which came with the prayers of the saints, ascended up before God out of the angel's hand. If you just quickly flick back a page to chapter 5, in Revelation 5 verse 8, and when he had taken the book, the four beasts and 24 elders fell down before the Lamb, having each, every one of them, harps and golden vials full of odours, which are the prayers of the saints. Although Revelation is largely written in symbolic language, when coupled with earlier examples, it definitely appears that there is a correlation between prayers and smell as far as God is concerned. As spirit beings, we will be able to smell far more than we can currently imagine. Spirit beings are not limited to the five senses that we have as human beings. Just how many they have, we don't know. But one day, very soon, we will find out. So how will the millennium smell? With no Satan around to taint things, with the Holy Spirit having been poured out throughout the land, with everyone being taught to be the next generation of teachers, all offering up prayers to God, it will most definitely be a sweet savour.